Hello and welcome to the show. This is Morph from More Speaks. Also, my co-host Ray is in the building.
What up, Basetown?
All right. So today we do have a special guest. Let me play one of the songs that for a long time I've liked. So I'm gonna play it first and then I'll introduce him.
I told him we gon' make him other niggas making no relations. Said I do it for my hometown. I put us on a map. We made it to the top, now it's a wrap. I do it for my hometown. Every time I come around, I see they know it's me. I hold it down.
All right, so that is Mr. Byron Bank with no S.
That is,
make sure you don't put
correct.
No S. There you go. So,
what's up?
So, Byron, I've been knowing you for many years. That's probably the first album I've heard of yours from Change. You've been around for a minute. I think that was that one came out, what, in 2015? Yep, 2015, the year we officially became better friends, put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all, man. Right. That was a while. It's been a while.
It was. So between that one and I'll get into some of my favorite songs. I got a few. You always been putting out music for a few years, well, more than a few years, close to a decade already. All right. Yeah. So I'll start with the first question. So just to get it started, and then Ray can kind of add some extra questions in there. So easy question. I mean, I know where you're from, but go ahead and let the podcast listeners know, where are you from?
Well, I mean, they heard the song. I'm from H-Town. So I'm from my hometown, born and raised. H-Town right here. State of
H-Town.
Texas. Do it big.
What side of H-Town, though?
Yeah,
southeast side of H-Town, you know, Broadway, Square Block, Hobby Airport area.
Pasadena.
Not Pasadena. Nah.
Get it's down,
a, it's a little further. It's a further southeast. Nah, like Telephone Road, you know, stuff like that.
All right. So second easy question. So what inspired you to get into music?
That's
Was there like a specific movement or...
Nah, it's not a movement. It's just it's in the blood, man. And like 16 years old, rest in peace, grandma. Like bought me my first keyboard. Ever since she bought me that first keyboard, man, and showed me that I was learning how to play just hitting keys. And then one day she walked in the room like, you know, I used to play, right? And I'm like, nah. And she hit them keys, and I was like, okay, so why you ain't in here teaching me? And she's like, nah, you gotta learn on your own.
And I got to say that most artists, they start with keyboards for some reason. Yeah. It is like most, especially, you know, hip hop artists, the keyboard, you know, or some type of piano is probably like the main instrument they start with.
No. Well, I went from I went from the keyboard. Then I went to the trumpet. And then I went to the drums. Like once I got to the drums, then that was it. It was a wrap, you know.
But so, the keyboard was the first one, right?
The keyboard was the very first. Yeah. You know,
it's for some reason I'm saying, man. I mean, I've talked to artists, and for some reason a keyboard comes in there one way or another. You know, a lot of them don't start with, you know, the drums because that's more expensive to get into. You know, you can get a keyboard, you know, $100 to $200 if you're not like a big ball and go get a big Korg or something like that. But yeah, I mean, drum sets, you know, start at 300. You know, if you're a young guy, you know, 15, 16 years old, first thing you're going to get is a keyboard.
Yeah, I got it. So crazy part is how I got the keyboard, though. You know, about to, y'all don't remember them home shopping networks that came on TV.
Yeah.
You know, the
QVC. Yeah.
that's how I got the keyboard.
Five easy installments. And if you purchase now, they wipe out the fifth one. You only pay for four.
That was the nice way of saying layaway.
That's why I got into it right there.
Yeah, that was a layaway. You know, when there wasn't layaway, you just make those, what they say, easy payments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got some sites right now that still do them easy payments.
Yeah.
They still do them easy payments.
You got sites. You still got, you know, QVC and Home Shopping Network is still there.
No, I don't do the QVC and Home Shopping Network now.
I mean, you don't, but I'm just saying, you know, seniors in retirement homes, they still do it. they still be shopping on that, you know, swiping credit cards and going to bingo.
I just want to let y'all know that any payment is an easy payment as long as you keep making it. You know what I'm saying?
Is it easy? It's not easy if it's $1,000.
Hey, them easy payments work though.
Yeah. All right. So, Ray, you had some? You were about to say something.
Yeah, man. Look, I Byron, first of all, I want to thank you and welcome you onto the show. I want to kind of, let's loosen up a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I went as far back as 2013 on Apple Music, but I stumbled upon you on SoundCloud as well. So you want to give us kind of a gauge as to how long you've been in the game, and, you know, from 16 to now is a long time. So, you know, kind of where you started at in 2013 to where you are now, how do you see the game from where you started to where you are?
From my perspective, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So from 2013, man, whew, you went back. to me, I was like, that was kind of after I left for a rap group, because I was in a rap group at that point. And I was pretty much producing at that time more than anything. I wasn't even rapping. And then I started rapping, and then kind of like, you know, I was like, well, I'm mostly like producing type deal. And then everybody kind of went their separate ways. So I wanted to continue because it's like, you do music, you know, it's just in my blood. So I want to continue. So I continued. Then as I continued, you know, that everything kind of transpired and kind of grew. I put producing down around that time. I just started focusing on lyrics and being an artist. And that's kind of when SoundCloud, all that happened. And, you know, I had a management team, you know, I had people around me that told me what they wanted me to do. And I kind of followed what they wanted me to do, not knowing that's not what I wanted to do, but that's what I thought people were using. Like, hey, let your people guide you. So kind of fast forwarding a little bit. Now I'm on my own. I do my own thing. Got my own people, you know, that I call all the shots how I want, you know, what I want to do. And kind of that's where the game is gone now. Like, everybody's independent, people doing their own things. You still got your team behind you and your people to move the wheels, but you know who's the person moving the wheels is the artist. Like the artist, which is the actual business, and the artist is the business. But the game now, like, it went from lyrics to one hits to dances. Now it's kind of like mumble rap, then it went back, and it's coming back to lyrics now. It's circling back, but it's still TikTok trends and all that, but it's circling back.
So just to throw something in there, so you said you actually got people, you know, you control people. So basically, your own Byron Bank record company, you know, and being the CEO, how's that feel compared to when people were telling you what to do compared to now, where you actually tell people what to do? Well, I mean, you really don't tell people what to do, but you tell them what you want, you know, because you don't want to upset them. You don't want to feel like you were, you know, back in 2013.
What's it like to be a CEO? You a CEO now. What's it like?
It's headaches. I can tell you that it's a lot of headaches, right? from, because it's not, I went from just being in the background, like, I'm just going to say it, like being a puppet, pretty much. You know, whatever you wanted. Okay, all right, well, we need you over here. Okay, I'm over here. This is what, hey, you shouldn't do that. You should do this. Hey, why you wearing that? You should wear this. So it went from all that to, what are you doing? This is what I'm wearing. This is how I'm going to go. I just need you to make this part happen. Like, this is what I need to happen. Let's make it happen. How much is it going to cost? What the budget is? You know, stuff like that. So it's like, whatever my vision is, let's execute my vision and let's just make it work. You know, back then it was my vision. It wasn't really all my vision. Now it's like, it's my vision. And if you're going to work with me, you got to believe my vision. So as a CEO, it's like, people got to be able to follow you and see your vision, and you got to help them see it too, so they can believe in it. But it's a lot of work. You know, you gotta wear many hats, and you gotta take that hat off, and then you also gotta trust people to follow you. So you gotta make sure that, okay, I'm gonna give you this job, and I gotta lay off because I gotta trust that person to do what I need them to do without being on them. Because if I be on them, then it's going to make me feel like I felt when people were always on me, asking me what I needed to do. So it's, you know, many hats.
All right. So since you're a CEO now, what's your biggest fear when you were new to the game, and your biggest fear now that you're pretty much, you know, running it?
My biggest fear was always talking to people. Like, back then, I had people to talk for me. I didn't like it all the time. And then we go behind the scenes and it's like, man, why you say that? Well, you ain't say nothing. You're right. So now it's like, to me, that was my biggest fear, just going into when you network and you go out there and people don't know you, and you're trying to make your pitch or get people to know you. It was always a scary feeling. And I wasn't comfortable like that. Like, you know, personality, I'm an introvert. I don't talk to people like that. And I had to figure that out. But, you know, now that I understand, you know, my personality, I know what I got to do to speak. And I got to speak because don't nobody speak it like me. So I got to speak it.
Do you think that was more of an age thing at the time, Byron? Or do you think that with all the years that you've put in the game, you finally heard your own voice and say, nah, I'm going to stop listening to people and this is what we're going to do now?
I think it was a mixture of both, you know, because you got to have that confidence in yourself first. At the beginning, you know, it's you know, everybody else got the confidence in you or because they're trying to control what you got because they have their agenda. But I think it's a little bit of both, of age and having that confidence and being bold to speak out. And I'm learning that a lot of people, it's hard to tell. So it's hard for somebody else to tell your story until you tell it.
Very well said.
So how did you overcome? I mean, I know you kind of gave us a snippet of how you overcame it by doing it on your own and, you know, speaking for yourself, but how did you overcome that, you know, throughout the years?
I don't know.
I mean, I got to be 100% honest, you know, and until I went to, you know, your concert and seeing you live, it's like two different people. The person, you know, that I knew, there was Byron Bank, was one person, you know, and then on the stage, it was Byron Bank, the artist, the performer, you know, getting the crowd riled up. I mean, even if, you know, I don't know. Even if it, you know, everybody was just like bawling out, you know, and going crazy, I mean, you would still continue your show and you know, prove that you were an artist. I mean, I've been to what, 4 or 5 of your concerts within the last few years that, you know, that I've known you.
Yeah. I think you're right. That's exactly what it was. I found my place on the stage. Like, I found that confidence on the stage. So it was like, And people say it's crazy because I still get like this. If we go to a show, I'm nervous as hell. You know, people say, oh, you here? Okay, cool. We're going to put you on in like 20 minutes. I'm cool. We're going to get you in 5. Now my stomach's turning, my hands shaking, like I'm worried. And it's like the moment I grab that microphone, it's like a switch. Because at that time, it's like, I used to get on stage and used to just be like, man, is people going to feel me up in here or what? Then all of a sudden, it snapped. It was like, I don't care if you feel me. Like, I got to stay, so I'm just going to do me. Whether you like it or not, this is my moment. Yeah. So I'm just going to take it. So every time I get the mic, it's like, this is my moment. I'm just going to take it.
I already got paid to perform, so I'm going to do it regardless or not.
If it's one person, like, cool. If it's multiple, great. If it's none, so, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, I mean, I've always noticed that. And I think we've never really talked about it, but I noticed, like, you're a totally different person on stage compared to, you know, Byron Bank, the normal person, you know, the day-to-day person. Byron Bank, the normal person, is just a calm, like you said, introvert, but I don't see you as an introvert because you're a comedian all the time. I mean, pretty much we both are, so it's totally different. So I really never seen that side of you until you jump on stage.
So Byron, I want to go ahead and congratulate you. I know you're coming off of a busy week. You just launched your new single called The Repair. Do we have maybe a new project in the works coming out in 2022? What you got going on?
Nah, I don't have no projects going besides I'm just dropping what I feel when I feel it, and I'm just dropping it. Like, that was an emotional thing for me because I've been in the studio and I was making beats because I started producing again. And then I noticed like all my beats were in like a certain key. And I was like, man, why do these beats make me feel like this? Well, come to find out, this key was like in a very emotional ass key. And it was making me feel kind of weird. And I was like, oh no, we got to get out of that. So that's where this song, The Repair, came from. Because it was like, I got to fix this. Like, I can't be in this mode. You know, every single song come out, it's like, I'm depressed or sad. Like, you know, I ain't that sad all the time. But so I was like, okay, we got to fix it. So I started listening to some of the old stuff and displaying that confidence again. And then when I did the repair, I was like, you know what? That's why I call it the repair, because I had to go back and find myself as an artist and as a musician and get myself out of that emotional slant that I was in. So that's why it's called The Repair. But no album yet. I'm thinking about it because I just did another song that's probably going to be coming out soon because I'm just holding on to it. It's already done, but I'm holding on to it. And if I keep doing it, then I'm probably going to have a project this year.
This will be, I'll just put it in this context. This will be, if you put out an album this year, this will be the first year you put back-to-back albums. I was looking back at the history. And you pretty much had like a, you put out an album, you wait a whole year, then you put out the second one. So every album, like 2013, 2015, 2017, then 2019, 2021. And then these two singles came out and I'm like, hold on, wait, he's got two and, you know, 22. Is he going to put out an album? So that was one of my questions. I know Ray beat me to it, but you know, it's like you're changing, but you know, change is good. You know, if you got, you know, songs you're trying to put out, then let's do it. You know, especially if you got enough to fill a whole album, you know, change the algorithm of your own, you know, destiny. Cause I looked at that. I'm like, okay, just looking at the discography, I can't even say that.
I'm not going to try to say it either. Just
discography.
You said it wrong too.
Discography is the correct way to say it.
Whatever. Your albums from the last couple of years. Yeah, we'll go that way. I mean, I just saw like the history and the way it went. And I'm like, okay, so this year may be a different year. You know, maybe COVID, you know, got you in your feelings and you're about to put some out. I mean, did say you're in your feelings.
I was in my feelings. I ain't gonna lie. I was in my feelings after I dropped Change too. I was like, I gotta keep going. And then it just stuff started hitting a little bottom a little bit. And then I was like, oh no, we gotta fix this. That album, you know, I gotta keep moving. Consistency, right? Gotta be consistent.
Yep.
So I was like, you know, let me drop this. I'm like, all right, cool. So I dropped Faking, and then I just dropped this one. But like I said, I got the new ones called I Been. I got that one already. Then I just got another couple of tracks that I produced. So it could easily turn into an album if I keep this rhythm up. It easily can. Okay. So we'll see.
It'll change the algorithm. All right. So let me kind of talk about a couple of songs that I like. So you already know I like Hometown. And you definitely know I like She Knows. Cause
yeah, I know. Oh yeah, She Knows.
That's a banger.
That's the strip club joint.
Yeah. Exactly. And then so like Bang Bang. I did like Bang Bang. And you actually said it in the actual, in the song. It has that Kill Bill vibe, and it does. It's got that little Asian lady in the background. Yep. I like that. And then She's for the Streets. That's another one I like. I mean, there's a few. I don't want to name them all because
I produced that one too.
Yeah. I know you kind of told me that. So, I mean, that one and the last one. I mean,
So Byron, let me tap in with you for a second, brother. Coming from that production side, you said you were a producer first and then you became an artist and a lyricist and all that. Do you think you still hear music the same? Like if you hear a song in the radio, do you listen to it as a producer? Do you listen to it as an artist? Or can you still sit down and listen to it and not have judgment and just enjoy the record as it's being played?
It depends. It depends on what it is. It can be a mixture. Like it could be a, if I listen, so one thing about me, I'll listen to any other artist that tell me, hey man, I got something too, man. I'll do something. I'll listen and I'll give it a good listen. Like I listen. And at that point I listen to it from a production ear, from an engineer's ear. And then also from a listener standpoint, sometimes I hear it, I'll be like, man, this is real good, and I enjoy it. And then sometimes I'll be like, man, from production's ear, if the energy was different right here, man, this would be, it would be crazy. So I hear it, I listen to it on almost all levels. And then some of them, like, I'm like, man, if I'm like, woo, like, Dr. Dre put out that him and Eminem got that song out, and I heard that thing straight up, and I had to replay it again because I was like, man, this is sick. But yeah, I listen from it from all point of views, all angles.
Do you think that
sometimes though it can take other out sometimes too?
Do you think other artists' songs manipulates your your flow or your vibe, or you kind of you listen to it on a production standpoint, but you don't kind of mimic it?
What do you mean? Say that again.
So like when you listen to a song, does it kind of like make you want to sound like them, or maybe kind of mimic their sound? Or I know because some people don't even like listening to other artists. That's what I'm getting at.
You're talking about like recycling.
Yeah.
Yeah. All music is recycled, right? And I don't care what person say they don't recycle music, because any hip hop artist, if you sampled something, you recycled something.
Pretty much everything is sampled.
There's so many, and people don't realize there's so many chords. There's not that many chords in the scale. Almost every song that's probably hot probably has the same chord in it if you really listen to it. And I did like a study and looked at some stuff. A lot of music online is in the C major scale, which ain't nothing but the white keys across the keyboard. So it's like, you can't, how many, there's only what, seven notes? Like you cannot make the same note. You're just changing, all you're doing is changing the sound. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I would say I know, but I don't know how to play the keyboard.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because there's, so there's a famous interview Tupac did with MTV where he talks about, you got to stop listening to the beat. You got to listen to the lyrics, because the industry can play the beat to where you're going to bop your head whether you like the beat or not. Yep. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I think what Morph was referencing was, you know how, like when Migos drop and they had that flow, that certain rhyme scheme that, you know, he's saying like, can you listen to music now without necessarily bopping off of somebody and kind of sticking to your own sound?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not like the Migos. Like, I like the Migos flow. You know, I don't like that. I don't like sometimes that they mumble a little bit, but they pattern is sick, you know, and I have to give it to them with their pattern. It's sick the way that they ride them beats, but you can't understand majority of them sometimes. So like I like that, you know, because it's about, to me, is, you know, again, from an artist and creative standpoint, like getting on a track and having that rhythm like that, you're automatically in a zone, whether you understand them or not, because that rhythm is where you feeling it at. Like trying to listen to something and then try to go back in the studio and mimic it, if I wanted to, I could, but it's like I have to stay true to me, like be authentic to myself. But really, the other crazy thing is when people don't know you, they always try to find somebody to compare you to.
All right.
Nice. Beautiful. Talk to me about this, because you said you're from Texas, you're from Houston, H-Town, Southeast. Where did you pick up on this love for lyrics and really taking passion in your craft and being a lyricist and stuff like that? Where does that come from?
So I grew up on, you know, SUC, you know, Lil Kiki and all them, DJ Screw, Scarface. And then I started listening to Pac. Then I started listening to Biggie. Then I fell in love with Jay-Z. And it just went from there. And that was just it. It just went from there.
So you skipped Nas and everything?
Oh, no, I like Nas. Nas, man, that whole ether, the ether and all that, man, you know, and one mic, and yeah, man, that's
Illmatic. Nas, yeah.
That's my bad, Byron. Don't fall for that. That's me.
Nah, you're good. Right. I was just trying to not go through the whole timeline, you know, because you got Rakim and all them, you know. I ain't trying to go that far, but, you know, I'm just skipping the timeline. Like, I grew up on a lot of South, West, and East music. Like, I didn't really mess with the Midwest, like, you know, until, you know, I guess you'd say the 2000s type era is when they came out. But back then it was just the South, the East, and the West. So I grew up on all that.
Talk to me a little bit about maybe some of your production influences, since I know you say production's a very big part of your career. Talk to me about some of those influences and how you develop your own sound now.
So a lot of my inspiration came from watching the crazy man that everybody call him, Kanye, and then Timbo. Like, Timbaland and Kanye is really where a lot of my production inspiration came from. When it came to seeing how an old record can be sampled, like, I got my first MPC, and that's exactly what I was trying to do. And then I know how Timbaland just be creating sounds out of nowhere, whatever he be doing, and he just creates something. I was like, this guy is a fool. Like, it's crazy. And then I never understood it. Like, I always tried. I would get frustrated. And then it took me literally just honing in on learning the chords, learning the keys, learning, you know, what notes you can play. And once I figured that out, it's like, everything is just brightened. And now, since I used to play in a band, you know, in school, I don't like any beat that's just like basic. Like, I need my beats to be full. So my music, if you listen to like some of my instruments and some of my music, you'll see that the instrumentation has to be full. It can't be just basic. So I like full instrumentation, just because of, you know, and that comes from listening to Timbo and Kanye too.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate that.
Those are two good producers right there. So what would you consider your favorite song from your beginnings and then, like, let's say, close to now?
Milestones and Blueprint is, like, my favorite one that's on Drank and Bottled Up Emotions, because it talks about it talks about my journey of music. You know, it that really how I'm creating, how I accomplish certain things, which are my milestones to my blueprint, to where I want to go. So that's like my favorite song. And it has that Rick Ross, which is that Rick Ross feel, but live instrumentation, almost like a Justice League type track. And yeah, that's my favorite right now.
All right. Now let's say, what would be your favorite from another artist now? And maybe what got you started? Like what song, like if you think right now, what song can you just off the top of the dome, you like, man, that's the song that really got me into music. You know, there's always that one song, you know, that we hear. Could be anything, you know. A lot of people, you know, go back to the, you know, Sugar Hill Gang and stuff like that, those songs. Like what kind of influenced you to in the beginning to get into music? I know music's been in you for many years, but what one song?
Dude, you hit me with a good one, because I can't even tell you which one it is. Like right off the bat. But if I had to go with anything from the Isley Brothers, okay, that's all I heard. Like when I was growing up, from Granny and Mom, anything from the Isley Brothers, bro. That was just hearing the groove and the way it flowed. Like that was just. That's it. And I knew, you know, anytime that came on, even probably now, people get started, you know, they get to sliding and snapping fingers. And, you know, so, yeah, I think I'll say anything from the Isley Brothers, man.
And what about now? What would you say, like, right now? I mean, there's a ton of songs, a lot of mumble songs, but what would you say present is like one of your favorite right now that you can just play any time of the day?
Me?
Yeah, besides you. I mean, of course you're going to play your own stuff. You're going to love your own. You got to. If you don't promote yourself, who's going to promote yourself?
Nah, he said no free promo for nobody.
I mean, I listen to a lot of, right now, I listen to a lot of my favorite artists right now, just in the game right now, to me, is J. Cole. So I listen to a lot of J. Cole right now, until Jigga drop. But I listen to a lot of J. Cole.
Drop dead right, or drop a new album?
Until Jay-Z drop a new album, not dead.
I'm just checking. Hey yo, Byron man. So let me ask you this. I'm gonna play with your mind a little bit. It's 2022. Let's say I walk up to you. You don't know who I am. I hand you a mixtape or an album, and it's your first album from 2013. What you telling that young man if you a CEO, you own your own record label right now in 2022? If you heard your project from 2013, what would you tell yourself?
What would I tell myself?
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, as a CEO and you heard your first project, like, what would you critique your project like? You know what I'm saying? Your first project, your baby.
So my very first project is to be totally honest, is nowhere available. It has been there, but it's nowhere available. I put it out and I took it down. So if I was to see anybody with that, my first thing would be like, how you get that? because, you know, that to me, that was a starting point. And I wouldn't have put it out. I wouldn't have put it out. If I was to listen to it now, I wouldn't have put it out, which is why it's not available. So if somebody had it, I would be like, how you get it? Cool. Great. That's a treasure. Keep it.
That's all right, Morf, let's drop the exclusive. No, I'm just playing. Nah, I'm messing with you.
Byron know if anybody can find it, it's going to be me. He knows that.
Nah, yeah, that one, man.
I say that, man, because, you know, when you first start out in the game, you so hard and so strict on yourself because you're trying to be the best of the best. And then now it's 2022 and it's like, I'm not saying you're not trying to be the best no more, but it's just like Do you still got that same hunger? You know, you wake up every day like, man, I still want to write the best song, be the best lyricist. You still got it in you?
Yeah, I think it's still there. That's why I did the Repair. And then I got, well, Faking came out in January. We just got Repair came out. I just did I Been, which is, I'm about to ready to do another one. I think that hunger is what keeps you motivated and consistent, even when you got these down moments, like to stay hungry. But to be hungry, to at the beginning to say I was hungry more than I am now, no. But I'm hungrier now than I was then.
Do you feel that album number one being, you know, not available right now, do you feel like you would wanna bring it back on and remix it, like redo it?
No.
Maybe, no? You didn't like it at all?
No. No. I'm going to tell you about that album, and I'm just going to give you. So the album was really when I left the group, and then it was like, I want to continue doing music.
Let me jump in. Is that the reason why it was called Withdrawal? Because you kind of
that's not that one. It's one way before that one.
Oh, it's before that one?
Yeah.
What year was that one?
I'm not telling you.
Okay.
But yeah, I did production on that one. Production wasn't what I wanted it to be at that time, but I only put it out because I wanted to prove that I could do it. I didn't need nobody to say that I couldn't put this out. I couldn't go to there. I couldn't figure it out. Like, I did all the research and I was able to put it out and got it released on stores and places. And I was proud of that at that time. But as I grew, it was like, okay, let's take this one down. Let's take it down. So I took it down.
Okay.
Byron, can you tell me a bit about, like, the moment you went from artist to you want to start your own record label? What was kind of like that light bulb moment for you that was like, I could do this for myself. I don't need a manager. I don't need a PR. I'm going to do this myself.
So I looked at how much money I was spending giving other people to do certain things that I found out I could do if I just sat down and studied and researched it. Like, you know, it's you got your time, you got time and money, right? Money is time. Time is money. Well, you're giving somebody else your money and for their time and for their knowledge. However, they already did the study and they did the game. So it's so much quicker for them and it takes longer for you. So when I figured out, well, sometimes you got to be a little patient to get where you want, to get the results that you want. Then that's when I was like, well, I could save money if I just be a little patient and do A, B, C, and D instead of going from A to try to go to Z real quick. And that B, C, and D ain't even filled out. So that's when I said, you know what? I can do my own label. I've learned a lot of lessons by dealing with other people. I can pretty much help other artists that are really inspired to do this and help them not make some of the mistakes that I made, you know, with trusting other people to do it and kind of educate. Because to me, it's not about me getting rich or whatever, which at the end of the day, I want to be, you know, but I think my blessing to come from helping others too, you know, and it's all about lifting others up in hopes that they'll reach back and be like, hey man, thanks. You know? So that's really what it is.
Byron, I want to give you, first of all, a big compliment, big shout out, because as a lyricist, the first song I heard from you, you know, I'm a new fan of yours. You know what I'm saying? I just got to check you out. I knew you were a lyricist off the bat. So talk to me about kind of keeping that. What I'm saying is I think you do a good job at bridging the old school with the new school and still keeping the lyrics in the front and center of everything. So I wanted to give you a compliment on that, but talk to me about how you bridge the gap between both generations, the new school and the old school.
You know, I don't even try to do it, to be honest. It's just, since I grew up, you know, Isley Brothers, the old school stuff, I grew up on that stuff. It's like in me. So I don't even try to like bridge that gap. I just do what I feel. And I think me doing what I feel and being authentic to it is what kind of drives some people. But then, like, when I listen to other music that's even popular or commercial, there's an old school feel to it regardless that's always there. And majority of the time, like, trying to stay lyrical is kind of what people want to hear, that puzzle, and see if they can figure out your lyric and dissect it. And the crazy part is when you come up with one, some people think they know what you said, and then when you break it down and it's something different, they're like, oh man, I didn't know he said that. So I kind of like that part of it. So, but bridging that gap, like, I don't try to bridge the gap, but I think it's mostly because most of the production now is done off a trap instrument. So all these production is coming off of a trap or that UJ, that that trill sound. That's what the instruments are. So it kind of bring that new school, but then you got the old school flow and the twists and the samples and stuff. That's, it just happens that it just happens naturally.
Man, that's interesting. I mean, I heard the old and the new, and it just meshes well every time I hear it, you know, from you. But if you could work with an artist or producer, who would it be? New school or old school, it don't matter.
Like, I would love, look, I just told you my two top producers, So if I had an opportunity, I definitely would want to work with Tim. And then, I definitely want to work with Tim. And if you're talking about, like, another, like, artist type deal, like, if I could get that, like, that old Kanye, that's the yay. I can see glimmers of it now that he's, out of his, he's still in his spiritual mode, but I can see glimmers of the old Kanye there. If I can get that old Kanye, yeah, I would love to do something with Kanye.
You said it already, so go ahead, Ray.
Do you think if we, all right, let's just say Kanye has a breakthrough moment right now, and he wakes up and he's old Kanye again. Do you think we could have a conversation of Drake versus Kanye in a different light, lyrically? I ain't saying just like who gonna have the most money and all that. I'm just saying old Kanye versus Drake in they primes. I think old Kanye takes it in a landslide. What you think?
When you go from, I say Kanye, and I'm gonna say why I say Kanye too. Because I know people probably gonna want to know why. I mean, nothing against Drake, but Drake got all the women, that he got the women songs, right? But then you only really get that extra lyrical Drake when he got some beef. Then he pulls out the BlackBerry or whatever, from the old scroll that he had back then. But Kanye, he's consistently on your neck, like back then, on your neck. So women songs, old school songs, whatever, Kanye was always on your neck, slow jam with him and Jamie Foxx, and Twista, like he was on people's neck. But Drake, yeah, if it was lyrical and yeah, Kanye will take it just downright. Drake would probably need to have a good motivational somebody coming at him, and he'll level up on that aspect, because that's what he's been doing lately. Like, he'll level up on just that aspect alone.
I'm gonna get Kanye in contact with you, bro. I need y'all to do a feature for real. I think you deserve it at this point, because he could do the production and he could do the verse. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we got to get Kanye and you in contact for sure.
You don't make that happen, Ray.
Hey, I mean, we come live out your dreams at Death Row Records. You know what I'm saying? We got you.
if you don't want the CEO dancing in your videos, all in your songs. So I got a question away from the music, because I mean, I know something special about Byron that, a lot of people don't know. And I don't even know if he's going to want to talk about it. Wrestling.
No.
You're a WWE fan. I don't think you miss any SummerSlams, any WrestleManias.
It's just WrestleMania.
I mean, you may miss some.
I just go to the WrestleManias. That's it. Just the WrestleManias. I can't remember what, the first WrestleMania that I've been to with my friends was in Detroit. That was like a long time ago. And for that, to that, I've been to every one since then, except for the one in Atlanta. I had to miss that one for, you know, other purposes. But I've been to everything since that one in Detroit. And I go to all the WrestleManias. I like more of the old school wrestlers than most of the new school wrestlers. So
yeah, the new school is kind of bogus. But I'm going to throw a monkey wrench in there because me and Ray were actually talking about this before. And in my perspective, I've been to a few WrestleManias, maybe two. Yeah, two. The one I went to, you know, happened to be in Houston. And then I went to another one. I can't remember where. Or maybe I saw it on TV. I don't know. But the one in Houston was when Undertaker was fighting against Kane, I believe. I know you went to that one because that was here. And they brought out the casket and he came out.
Was it Kane? And
I think it was Kane, but I was telling Ray that there's a difference between, okay, wrestling is fake. We all know that, right?
To a point.
But yeah, to a point. Cause
man,
you
what
still
you
get
mean
hurt.
Is fake, bro? No, I'm just playing.
But the difference between seeing it on TV and being there, it's like they said, it's the most electrifying thing in the world because like the feeling in there is like totally different. Like you feel like it's real when you're there compared to when you see it on TV and you can kind of see them mumble to each other and say, hey, I'm going to throw you off the rope and jump over you. And then I'm going to clothesline you. You know, I mean, they say it fast. They already got it preset, but I'm just saying, you know, even though that still hurts, but you know, explain to us that feeling when you're there. Cause I know you've been to so many and you with your boys, I know y'all, you know, drinking and having fun. How is it?
I mean, it's almost like going to a game, like kind of like a basketball game or a football game, like whatever sport you're really in, like it's nothing like being actually there. And it's not because you're just watching what's happening. You got other people around you that's just enjoying it just as much as you is. So you all get into it. But for me, it's like when you got, like when the Undertaker come out, like and he throw them flames, like on TV, it look cool. But while you there, like you feel it. Like you feel the heat, you know? Yeah. It's like, man, hold on. And the entries and the music come on. It's like, yo, like this is crazy. So it's nothing like being there than watching it, like you say, on TV. So yeah, and it's all about the enjoyment because the people in front of you may be feeling it a little bit more than you, and then you start drinking, then you start getting into it, the people behind you start getting into it. Nobody's like, why are you doing that? Like everybody's into it. So it's like everybody that's there is there for a reason, and they're there for the experience, not to just sit there and look at it like they could look at it at home.
Man. I do gotta say that like you said, it's like baseball, basketball, but the biggest difference is it seems like when people go to baseball or basketball or, you know, anything like that, there's always extra people that really didn't want to go. And you kind of see them like on their phone. When you see people in WrestleMania, there's nobody sitting down. Like they're standing up, you know, Stone Cold comes out, you hear the glass break. Everybody just jump up to their feet and put both arms up. I mean, I got to say it's totally different. I kind of disagreed with what you said, but nicely, but I mean, it's totally different. Like it's electric. That's the best way I can explain it.
Man, Byron, let me tell you something, brother. So I'm in the spirit of keeping that same energy. Cause I don't like I'm not going to throw the rock and hide my hand. You know what I'm saying? I had talked down on people that still watch wrestling nowadays and we grown.
He did.
You know what I'm saying? But he did.
That's why I brought it up.
But hold on. See, that's because he being Petty LaBelle. So I'm like, hold on, bro. No, I know what he doing. So look, check this out, Byron. My thing was, if you a grown man, you got family, you got kids, or you just grown, period, and you ain't got nothing to do, and you just sitting at home watching wrestling, like, that's a problem to me. But if you and your boys got a tradition of like, look, I've been going since, you know, back in the day, Pops took me to watch the one in Detroit, and then we've been going ever since. I only missed one. That's different than, yo, man, I can't go out with you tonight because I'm going to stay home and watch wrestling. Like, two different things. Two different things, man. So he trying to bury me with that. But you
I didn't bring it up.
But here's the killer part, though. My friends watch wrestling more than me. I don't watch it until it's time to go to WrestleMania.
Like, see, that's my point, though. Why are you grown watching wrestling right now? Like, WrestleMania, fine. You want to go to the main event? Because that's like the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Cool. But if you grown and you just watching it on a Monday night Raw versus SmackDown, like, come on, man.
And I got a problem with that. And most of them, like you said, they grew up watching it with their pops and stuff. So they grew up like that. Now they watch it with their kids. But me, like, I don't watch it on when it's on TV. I don't. Like, and they make fun of me because they be like, so what's the matches today, Byron? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to find out when we get ready to get there. You know, when it get close. So it's like I'm a fan of the old. Like I said, I know the old wrestlers, and then I know some of the new ones and stuff. And going there and being part of the experience is different. But me sitting at home watching it, I don't really get into it watching it at home.
All right, this is going to be the one that's going to determine everything, Byron. Who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
I mean, it's to me, it's The Undertaker right now. It's always been Undertaker, and the fact that he's in the Hall of Fame and retired, not right now, I'm kind of lost for words. But then I still like when Stone Cold come out. I still like when Stone Cold come out. I like, you know, I don't like Triple H for nothing in the world. I don't care what anybody say. But I like Shawn Michaels. I really like Shawn Michaels too. So
what about Brock Lesnar?
No.
Before or after he got his ass whooped?
I never liked Brock Lesnar as a wrestler. Like he's to me, he's still a fighter. He's not I don't see him as a wrestler.
So The Rock versus Stone Cold, who got your vote?
Stone Cold.
There you go. That's my guy.
I like The Rock, but Stone Cold. I'm a Stone Cold fan too. But
you're a solid guy, young man. You're a solid guy.
Solid guy. I mean, so let's go ahead and throw it to another topic. I want you to promote yourself, and I don't know if you want to talk about your podcast. I mean, I know you're on our podcast, but your podcast has been doing excellent. You got what, like 3,000 episodes?
No, we don't have 3,000 episodes. We're on season 2. I think that's like episode 25. No, 23. We dropped 23. And I think we have 24, 25 out too, I think. I cannot remember. But yeah, 715 podcast, of course. I know that's what my podcast is. I just push buttons on that podcast, by the way.
You just push buttons. Come on, I heard you. So... speaking of like your podcast, right? So 715 podcast, and I heard on some of your, you know, podcasts, you kind of explain where the 715 came from, and you kind of told me that basically was the apartment that y'all met at.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
That's where we all hung out. Like it was the apartment. Like it was called a dude's night. Like we hung out. All the dudes got together. We hung out. Like, no matter what we did, we hung out. We had parties. That's the place where everything went down. You know, stories, all type of stuff happened. Drinking. We started drinking and all that stuff. So that's really the place, the apartment number. That's the apartment number and the place where it all went down.
And it's a drinking podcast, pretty much.
That is correct. So you hear all, if you hear like, ice jiggling in the cups, that's because we're drinking from start to finish.
Drinking and pushing buttons. Byron Bank. Pushing
buttons, yes.
What you sipping on over there, Byron?
What do I sip? Right now, I'm not sipping on anything right now.
That's a problem. We got to change that.
I would have to get up and go fix something in my Yeti cup, but got, you know, but normally I'm drinking some Crown and Coke, not Coke, but it's cranberry juice. That's my concoction, Crown and cranberry juice. And
Crown and cranberry. Okay.
Yeah.
So which Crown?
Crown and Pepsi's a no-go.
Apple Crown. Do Apple Crown, and you do like a, you fill it up halfway in the Yeti cup, and then you do like maybe just a couple splashes of the cranberry in the cup, just enough. And man, I tell you, it's good. It's good. It's real good.
You sound like he's tasting it right now, just by saying
smiling all night.
Yeah,
nah, that's the one that get him in trouble the most. Byron, do you want to? We want to kind of talk about like you want to push your clothing brand. You know, you got a lot of movements going on, brother. I don't know how you do so many things at one time.
Merch, he's got everything.
Yeah, you know what you got? You got a website people could check out. You know what I'm saying? Let us know where we could find a lot of your content.
Yeah, so you can find me at thebyronbank.com. That's thebyronbank.com. You want to find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the other great stuff, it's Byron Bank, all one word. Even on TikTok, I finally created a TikTok. So you can find me on that, but I'm mostly doing production on there so people can listen to beats on there. I'm about to start selling beats. Then I got merch available. I'm slowed down on merch, but I got my own press and stuff, so we merching right now. Then we're going to be doing videos and all that other good stuff. So, you know, growing
the CEO, there's going to be all in people's videos.
Growing the business slowly. Breaking Bank Records is the record company, LLC'd here based in Houston. And yeah, you know, I'm keep moving.
You got anybody on your roster right now that you want to mention, or it's just you riding? It's just Byron Bank right now.
No, it's actually Byron Bank and Hispanic artist from the southeast side of Houston. His name is Dro Frazier, Smoking Dro Frazier, as we call him. He got an album out.
Nice.
Got an album out right now called Consequently, an EP. Then he also has two singles out, Hakuna Matata, and the other one is I Can't. So, and yeah.
He nice with it too. I heard him as well in concert. He got his own little
man.
Posse.
He should have had a collab on that Hakuna Matata. That would have been live. I ain't lying. I know a guy.
So that Hakuna Matata was his first release. Then
with Ray?
No, Timon and Pumbaa, fool.
Dude.
Shout out to my boy Joe Frazier.
Hey, for real, shout out my boy Smoking Dro Frazier out in the southeast. Much love, brother.
That's what you get with your corny dad joke.
Hey, I gotta laugh. That's all that I walk a mile for a smile, bro.
All right. Any questions for us, Byron? Look, he's cracking himself up in the dark.
He said he walked them all for a smile. I was done.
I'm married, y'all. I ain't got shit else to do, man.
Nah, man, I'm good, man. I enjoyed the conversation, man. I enjoyed the energy. If I knew it was gonna be this good, I could have pulled me a glass up. It would have definitely been even worse. But
skipped out on us. No,
I didn't get the memo.
You dissed us for 10 weeks.
I didn't get the memo, you know. I didn't get the memo I could drink, you know. If I could have drunk, we would be drinking right now.
Byron, but I took it personal that you missed out on this last week, but then when I saw you release the single, I was like, nah, it's cool. It makes sense. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I wouldn't have done the podcast either. So I ain't mad at
you.
Yeah,
he actually told me he had interviews, so I was like, okay, we'll just leave it alone.
Yeah, I had a lot of stuff going on last week, and I apologize that I missed last week. By the time I realized it, I even hit morph up and I was like, bro, my bad. I forgot.
It's okay. I'll look for any excuse to call this man and be like, you got to watch this shit, bro. We got to talk about this shit. And like, next thing you know, we talking about Biggie and Tupac. And I just get him like, he don't even like music ain't even like his main thing. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
once we get him talking about music, it's just like, we just go, bro.
Certain times, not all the time.
Because I be pushing his buttons because he's from New York. So I'm like, bro, you know, I mean, Biggie had it, but, you know, Tupac was from the East too, you know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that, bro. So even though we missed out last week, it was all love and fun because we still got to talk about, you know, legends in the game. And, you know, you've been doing this for over 10 years now, brother. So hopefully you got another 10, 20 left in the tank. Hopefully you're making a lot of money, you know what I'm saying? But we're going to keep pushing it, you know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, you're from Houston. And you're opening up new doors and new opportunities for new artists as well. So it's very important to highlight, you know, not only where you come from, but where you at and where you going. And so far, so good, brother. Keep it up. Salute from me to you and from Morph. And
yes, sir.
We really thank you for being on the show today. We couldn't have done it without you. So, you know, much love to you, brother.
Appreciate y'all.
Welcome to More Speaks.